I thought it was a dating game. I was like, how is James Tarkovsky single? Turns out, like, this is his wife.
So he's just being romantic to his wife, and you thought this was disgusting.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
Very welcome along. It is the Hurling Pod with thanks to Bord Gáis Energy, the proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship. We had a week back after a week off. Now we get ready for another week off again. But we had some interesting games in the weekend just gone by. Despite the fact that Cork saw their lead eaten away by Waterford, they held on for their first win of the campaign at Páirc Uíomh, coming out by a couple of points. Offaly led 14-8 at halftime against Kilkenny, but Kilkenny blew them away in the third quarter of the game as they registered a 126-119 victory. Pretty much guarantees Kilkenny's spot in the top flight for next season. And Wexford remain unbeaten in Division 1A, despite the fact they had to go around the house with the free takers after Lee Chin came off. They held on for a draw in the end with Jack O'Connor, who was released to play just 48 hours before the game when his suspension was taken away, getting the late score to get the equaliser as it finished 113-16 points at Wexford Park. In 1B, the results going as expected. Limerick opening up at Croke Park, bringing back a lot of their frontline players as they defeated Dublin by 3-18. Tipperary got a bit of a late scare against Westmeath. They changed 14 players from their last game against Galway, but held on in the end, 3-25-2-21. And Galway opened up on Antrim McCorrigan Park, winning by 235-113. Very significant result in Division 2A as well. Carlow going back into the Leinster Championship this year, having won the McDonagh last year, looks like they're going to be playing Division 1B hurling next season. They're in a strong position at the top of the table with a couple of games to go after they won away from home against their neighbours Laois by 123-21 points. Delighted to say, to look back at the week that's been and all the rest of the hurling news as well, we've got James Skell and Paul Murphy. How are you getting on, lads?
How's it going, lads?
Very good, how are you?
I don't know how you feel, Paul, about this, where we had our break, we have one game, we have a break again. It's almost exactly the same as the Six Nations rugby and the breaks for the hurling falling on the same weeks as well. Like, I don't know, it's two games, one game and two games. How do you feel about having to go away now for another week when it just felt like it was getting back going again?
Yeah, like it's hard to see the whole league just getting going because there are matches, each team nearly has a match that, particularly for the stronger teams, that they're kind of, what would you say, they're the easier games or the games that don't really have a huge amount of competition in them. So even with the breaks, some of the games themselves are nearly serving as breaks anyway because, you know, teams are nearly getting to cruise through a game and we've seen it a few times. So I suppose just the way that the teams are matched up and then also that the way the breaks are dropping, it is kind of, it does have that stop-start feeling of, yeah, we're getting a bit of momentum, it's stopping again, and we're looking at teams that are going Cork at the first win over the weekend, and you're going, right, you know, here we go, we're going to see a good Cork performance following week, but no, there's a break, so we get 2 weeks off. But yeah, it's a tricky one. I'd say the panels are happy enough, though, at the same time, because you are seeing teams pick up a few knocks, and we've mentioned it in previous pods as well, like, you know, Stephen Bennett picking up a knock, which you'd imagine was just through the strain of the last few weeks. We saw Keith Rosser talking about Lee Chin as well, coming off just because, not necessarily he pulled anything, but just because he could feel the body telling him something could go here, which I know exactly what he's saying there. So I think the teams will welcome it. Get that bit of recovery into lads, see how lads are getting on. Maybe, you know, try a few other things in the training field as opposed to on the field. But for us as the neutral or as the spectator, yeah, it's a little bit stop-start. And we're kind of, like, I mean, at the same time, we're not too far off championship as well. So, you know, it's suddenly stop-start and then into round robin, so it'll kick off quick enough, but yeah, I suppose it's that bit of momentum is just lacking there.
8 weekends away from championship. Before we get into anything else, Kel, you are the dedicated follower of fashion on this podcast. What did you make of Cork's jersey that they wore against Waterford at the weekend?
I'm the dedicated follower of fashion.
When did we decide this?
That's the first time in my life I've ever been kind of associated with fashion. In all the years I was Galway, right, you always used to get a player to represent the group to go pick the gear or pick you know, the suits or whatever. Never once was I asked. So you can, so you know exactly that statement is not true.
Nor wanted to be asked, I'd imagine.
It was a handy way for me to get around to talk about the jersey.
But now you've
brought me down a totally different rabbit hole here. So who was the fashionable guy on the Galway panel? Because I'm led to believe from some of the Westmeath lads that the most flash guy they have right now is Davy Glennon. So I don't know if he was the flash guy on the Galway panel as well, was he?
Well, there's levels to this. Like, you couldn't let him near anything because you'd be like the Liverpool team of 96, the FA Cup. You come in a white suit, you know. You try to pick someone who is kind of level-headed in that way, has a bit of sense of style, but also is not outlandish. So he usually got Landa with the likes of, you know, Kenning or David Burke, or those guys who you can trust. Then it goes in the complete reverse. We left it to Colm Cannon one day, and everything was black. Black training tops, black. It's just so like his bland style. I don't mind that colour shite. You know, that's like, just so here. You know, it's training gear anyways. I got into training gear. I forgot the question. Cork, sorry. The Cork jersey. Look, at Capitaglia colours, red and black. I liked it. I can't complain about it, you know.
So are you saying if your club were to get a shipment of this gear, you'd be happy enough with it?
I didn't say that at all. I just said the colours I liked it today. I look at, for me, Cork's dominant colour is red. You know what I mean? So and their secondary colour is white. If they're doing an away jersey, their secondary colour has to become the primary jersey. It's that simple, right? The red and black, it doesn't really go with GAA circles. It goes against the grain entirely, you know. If it was a one-off commemorative jersey, I'd say something, fair enough. It can be used for sales for a cause. But if they're going to use it in the future, again, no, not for me.
Yeah, the design's not for me, Murph, to be honest. Yeah. It reminded me of the Ireland rugby jersey a couple of years ago, which they said was different and people would buy it, and I saw very few people actually buy it, where it was like highlighter colour and it looked like a tank had driven over it. Yeah. In this case, there's speckles of red and there's kind of lightning flashes, and it looks more like a comic book top than an actual GAA jersey.
Yeah, well, to be fair, like I was looking at it saying that, I mean, Cork are in debt, like in terms of paying off the Cork leave. So they have to do something.
No, but in fairness,
they have to do something. Like, and this is obviously, like, we often see inter-county teams change their jersey every year, marginally. They change the colour, they change whatever, but they know the parents have to go out and buy the jersey for their young fella. This jersey was obviously more so for the younger clientele. You know, you're not going to see a lad maybe 40 years of age. No offense, lads maybe have bought them. But it's aimed at the teenagers and stuff. It's aimed at, like, I mean, you see a lot of young player or young teenagers and things wearing training tops and different style, let's say Kilkenny gear, Galway gear. That's who it's aimed at. And, like, that's obviously what Cork are trying to do at the moment. Now, I have to say as well, I played against a Cork team that wore a blue jersey one day. It was actually quite nice. It was that commemorative one down in Parky Rin the evening, which actually was good. But look, I suppose, yeah, it was a bit of a strange one. It was actually hard to make out on telly until they zoomed in. You couldn't see what it was until it actually zoomed in a small bit. But it wasn't really my design, but I understand what they're trying to do. And, you know, I think people would give out if they weren't trying to do something else to generate a bit of revenue anyway. So
the other bugbear of mine in this one, by all means, wear this against Wexford. Wear this against Galway. I know they're not playing Galway in the division this year, but wear it against a team where genuinely you could argue there's a bit of a clash against a maroon or against a purple in Wexford's case. Not when you're playing against a team who are wearing white.
No, exactly. And like at home as well, you know, you can justify it sometimes when it's a away jersey. And I would say actually, yeah, probably just trying to think, maybe Galway a little bit more. If the conditions were bad, it would be kind of hard to tell, but I don't think the colour that they actually went for would differentiate from Galway a whole lot if the conditions are that bad and trying to pick out players anyway. But I think away from home, like Galway do have a second one as well, don't they? They have something with like a bit of camouflage in it or something like that, don't they?
That was like under licence with commemorative purposes. You know, that was kind of a one-off.
Right.
And they do that one every kind of couple of years. But generally our away jersey is fully white.
But wouldn't that be something similar though as well? If they do one every few years, it's kind of just to, you know, spark a bit of revenue as well. Like, I mean,
I love the way you say Cork and debt. Million jerseys.
Well, like, I mean, every week we're talking about, you know, Super Value, Parky Queeve and different things. Like, I mean, what you want me to do?
Everybody in Cork, every man, woman and child has to buy 10 jerseys each.
Revelation of the night, Cork have to service debt. So there you go. If you didn't know, now you do. Some of the correspondence before we dig into the games. Stockroom Tim, lads, you took that Clare stuff way too seriously. Every county is fellas like that. I'm from Clare and I can't fault anything you've said.
Thank you, Stockroom Tim.
If we want people to be talking about us, then we'll have to pull the finger out in a semi-final and a final. Simple as that. So there you go.
Yeah, fair play. That's him saying it. That's
Quite as nice a place. Mike Barry, 2461. God Loon, it's that time of year again. James Scahill on off the ball.
What does God Loon mean?
I have no idea.
I actually read that as well. I didn't know what that was.
Yeah.
Is that just an element of illiteracy? Or what is it? Like, is he...
I'm not sure.
I'd say it's a local phrase.
Maybe. Go back to Mike Barry, 2461, and realise why he's missed about 8 episodes that we already have uploaded from the pod so far this year. Shane Power, 2423. two questions for the next pod, lads. I'll get two in for the price of one. What do you think success would look like for Waterford this year? Is it just to get out of Munster, or even just win a game in the round robin, or can it be bigger than that? Being from their county, there still is some much positivity or hope from what I gather, and personally, I'm not a tactic of Davies working. So obviously we watched Waterford lose by a couple of points against Cork on Sunday afternoon. So for you guys, while I think about the second question, which is for me, what does a good year look like for Waterford then? Murph, you want to go first?
Yeah, I think getting out of round robin, getting out of Munster, let's say, is a good year for Waterford. Waterford are in a dangerous place where they could get stuck in a bit of a rut while, they do have good players there and they're capable if they get their act together. I've shown flickers of it in different games, but have shown no consistency or, again, to go back to that word, a bit of momentum. So considering how competitive Munster is, for this Waterford team to put themselves in the top three in Munster, that means, two really good teams have also lost out there. That, I think, is where Waterford need to be, which, it's a long way from, I'd say, if this time 2 years ago when we were on this podcast, we were talking about they were probably the team to beat Limerick with the size of their panel. So to go to here now to say that getting out of Munster is a good year for Waterford, it shows how far they've come in that time. So I don't think maybe winning a round robin game, I think any team can go and maybe overturn another team in any given day, and they're not that far away. But winning one round robin game is so outlandish. But I think being consistent enough to get out of Munster, getting out of Munster means winning two, really, I suppose, just going by Cork last year. Really having to get two games, and see after that, see what other way results go. But I think realistically, I know we'll get to the championship picks in the next few weeks, but they wouldn't be in my top three at the moment, obviously, to come out of Munster. So to turn that around, I would feel that's a good year for Waterford.
Just before you give yours, Scal, just to give an update on where the Waterford injuries are at. So the next day, they expect they'll have Ian Kenny, Earl Daly, Jack Fagan, Shane Bennett, Patrick Fitzgerald, Desi Hutchinson against Wexford, which is coming up on Sunday week. Tadhg De Burka, outside chance of being involved in that game. Stephen Bennett looks like he's going to miss the rest of the National League because he's had a hamstring injury, which is against Clare in the second round. It looks like they're not going to take any risks. So that's a lot of players still to come back in. Assuming they've got all those players back for Championship and injuries don't get added on, Skell, where do you see Waterford going, or what's a good Waterford year to answer Shane's question?
Yeah, I'm not quite as positive about their chances as Murphy is. It was interesting. I was down in Parky Creek yesterday we were playing the Trinity Challenge, and as the game ended, one of the backroom team for Waterford was running out, setting up, obviously. And he turns to me and says, "Will you go easy on the podcast tomorrow? You're very harsh." And it's like, it's like she said, "No." I said, "You have to win the game first, But for me, I don't mean this in a bad way, but I think if they win a game and don't get the wooden spoon, that's not too bad. From where they were last year, if you ask me, or where they're going, you know what I mean? It's hard for me to see them beating Clare. It's hard for me to see them beating Limerick and Tipperary and Cork. If they come away with a game without the wooden spoon, that's not too bad. If they get out of the group, that's huge success. That's massive success, because we see how hard it is to come out of the group in the first place for even the, who we class as the juggernauts, Limerick. If you cast your mind back to some of the results last year, if they win, a point or another way, Limerick are potentially knocked out. So getting out of Munster is no easy task. So if they do that, that's hugely successful. If they avoid the wooden spoon, that's a step in the positive in the right direction. And ultimately, I think any kind of, with their interviews, articles, whatever it is, I hear around Waterford, they're really not, there's not really filled with optimism. Do you know what I mean? They're just looking for, their cravings for a bit of positivity, just something to go well, because what happens when you have, people in management, they have, it creates a bit of hysteria, a bit of chaos, etc., and sometimes negativity. So I think there's people who want a bit of positivity, get a run. If they win a game or two, fabulous. If they come out of Munster, that's a great year.
Look, yeah, we talked about this before, but again, I was looking at David Fitzgerald's quotes from after the game yesterday afternoon, and he said, and I'm going to use the word effing as opposed to what was actually said on these quotes. He said, quote, "I thought we should have gone in level or one up, and then we effing go down to 10. I'm so proud of the boys, though. If that was over the last 5 or 6 years and at different times they're going down 10, then they go down 15 or they go down 20. They aren't hanging on at 10. They were going down more. I think you saw the fight that's in them today. I'd say there were 4 or 5 wides that we'll kick ourselves over." Then he was asked why Waterford were slow out of the traps at the start of the second half. He said, "I don't effing know. We tried to say there isn't a problem, that we're imagining it, but we're not. It happened in the Offaly game. It happened in the Clare game. and it happened again today. I don't know why, and we're just going to have to go back and sort this out. So I don't know, Paul, whether this is again the classic talking down again, because you go back to when Waterford won the National Hurling League a couple of years ago. He's talking about the last 5 or 6 years they would have just shipped a beating, yet that Waterford team was handing out a few beatings at this time of the year 2 years ago.
Oh yeah, the first thing I thought when I read that was, I don't remember Cork being, or not Cork, Waterford being bet by 20 or 25 points in the last 5 or 6 years. I could be wrong, and I'm sure maybe someone will correct me, but I don't remember that.
The fair game in the round robin, maybe that ended up somewhere like that, didn't it?
20 or 25, was it?
Do you remember the Clare game? You were at it, Skell, in the round robin. Do you remember when they got absolutely...
That was the Munster Championship.
Yeah, Munster Championship, yeah.
You might check that, Skell, while we're talking then. You check that score there.
You fact-check it, but...
Wouldn't
have been too many, though.
No, there wouldn't have been too many, and I think it's a very broad stroke to say about the team. Like, in fairness, he is giving credit to them, and I think everybody did. They came back really well in the second half, down by 10 points, league match, down below in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. You know, he could drop the head and just let the game peter out, but they came back at them, and they did have a chance to win it, you know, from that, what was it, Skell, 12?
Yeah, 12 points, but it was 3-31 to clear to 2-22.
Yeah, so again, I think it's just one of these comments that, again, like, he can't just let it pass by. Like, I mean, he can't just throw out a statement like that saying, I think this team 5 or 6 years ago, because we mentioned a few times that Davey thrown back into other managers' time with Waterford, which I don't think is a fair thing to do. You can reference a team from a few years ago, but as if it seems to be that he's referencing that, you know, their mental strength has come on leaps and bounds. I don't think it has. You know, if anything, it's just flatlined to a degree. Like, they've had disappointing results over the last few years. Yeah, that's for sure. But they haven't, I mean, Waterford haven't been one of those teams shipping 20, 25 points from my memory, or that you'd associate with that. So, like, that becomes nearly the distraction there. Like, I just tried to put myself in the Waterford players' boots to hear that go, you know, I'd be thinking that the manager would be coming out saying, yeah, look, we were disappointed in the second half, the start of the second half. We were only a point in it at half time. You know, letting going out to 10 is very disappointing. But, you know, we pulled it back and, you know, that's all you have to say. But kind of casting your mind back to 5 years ago to something that didn't happen where they're beaten by 20 or 25 points. I mean, it just seems counterproductive to what you're actually trying to do to the team at the time. But I think
it's a bit of a spin, like. I think it's a spin to try and change the narrative around the team to say that it's more positive than it actually is. What's happened in the last maybe 18 months of his tenure has been a graph of improvement as opposed to the previous management team. It's complete notion bullshit, to be honest. You know, like they got, if you go back to 2020, like the contested Ireland final, Munster final, beaten by 4 points, just checked there. They had a relatively good run. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yes, it petered out. Fair enough, right? But like the history of this manager, all these teams peter out at the end of his tenures. You know what I mean? I just think it's disingenuous. Like, and if when you dive into the game, let's say, which after those comments, I had to dive into it. You know, a lot of Waterford's problems stemmed from the tactical setup.
Yeah.
You know, yes, there was a bit of a fight. Yes, the fight levels, they increased as the game kind of went on in the second half. But a lot of their issues stemmed from what way they were set up and how they were going to go about the play. And once they actually changed that, you know, they got started to get better.
Dig into that a bit, because Shane Dowling did a very good piece both on the puck outs and how open Waterford were when Cork ran through them a few times during the game, including the goal. So what did you see tactically about the setup that left them vulnerable?
So we'll stick with me here now, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
I have to paint a picture here, right? So if you imagine, right, where most teams now, they'll set up on a puck out, they'll have their own full back line on the 21, their own half back line around the 45-50, and so on and so forth, right? So in Waterford, you know, push up way further than that. So on who's got the goal? Jack Connor got the goal, right? Mm-hmm. So on his goal, like, see, he has that's a Waterford puck out, right? There's two lads inside their 45, two Waterford players. There's three inside the 45 to 65. Okay, so that's five players inside the 65. There's four between the 65s, and there's five inside the far 45, right? So what you have now is all your Waterford team is pushed up, way up in an advanced position, okay? And the minute that ball goes long, right, what you have straight away is a numerical disadvantage where the ball lands. Because obviously there's more Waterford players closer to your own goal than there is Cork. So you've got a numerical disadvantage straight away. That's what happens. I think Mark Coleman wins the secondary possession on an 8-on-7 situation, okay? And then what happens is he hands the ball to Jack Connor. And because it's a 4-on-4 straight away, 4 Cork and 4 Waterford, that's with 65 square yards, more, 65 yards and 65 width and breadth, it's impossible for any Waterford defender to get a finger on Jack O'Connor, because if he commits, It's just a pop pass, it's straight through. So Jack O'Connor comes right through the middle, and the defenders, they're caught in no man's land, in fairness to them, because they don't have the cover. They have to stick with their own men. If they commit, Jack O'Connor passes, and then the next man scores a goal. So the setup was horrendous. So if you're doing that, right, and you're putting ball into a zone where you don't have an numerical advantage, you're only asking for trouble. And like, if you look at the first 4 minutes of the second half, it was 6-0 in favour of Cork, including the goal chance, you know, and it all contributed. It was all because of the way Waterford set up. Now, when they go 10 points down, they pull it back and they start going short puckouts. They push up on Cork and Cork start going long puckouts, and the whole game starts to change. Do you know what I mean? Because Waterford changed to a possession-based game where they controlled the ball as opposed to landing into an area where they thought they had control. Do you know what I mean? And they had no control whatsoever. And then you didn't allow Cork to go a possession game. Then you changed Cork around to do what Waterford were doing, and it started working in Waterford's favour. It was that simple. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, even from the goalkeeper's perspective, it's a hard position to be in, looking out, going, there's no options here, like, and then still having to go stick with this perceived system. And it's just point after point after point. And like, it wasn't that difficult to dissect. You know what I mean? It was fairly apparent when the high behind camera went on the goals, you could see after one or two errors, this is the problem. You know, fix it now. But it took them, what was it, lads? Was it 60 minutes? You know, wherever it was by the time they got... The 57 minutes when Prendergast got the point by the time they actually got going again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So hopefully I explained that in good state. I'll now take questions, Will.
Yeah. Well, like, to throw someone over to Murph, because you can give us a cornerback's perspective, or someone who's played in the halfback line as well. It's like, how frustrating is that when you see O'Connor coming straight through the middle and there's nobody able to get near him, and he runs pretty much from his own 65 to the point where he hits the shot?
Yeah. Like, I was actually listening to it on the radio at the time, and Marty Morrissey was saying that one of the best calls of the season. Now, I completely understand what he was saying. He's like, one of the best calls of the season. He's after weaving through so many lads and hung it up. Even when I saw the first shot of it then, when he ran from midfield, I was like, geez, that's impressive. Yeah, but as Skelly was saying there, was the shot behind the goal. As soon as he got the possession of the ball, and the shot behind the goal shows you what he was looking at, I think he actually looked up and went, oh, Jesus, I have to run a goal here because it's wide open. There was literally a straight line from him on 65 straight through into the keeper, which that can't happen. And then also, from a cornerback's point of view, as you're asking, you're damned if you do or damned if you don't. You're now 4-on-4. You go running because the man behind, I think it was Caleb Lyons, was behind Jack O'Connor. You know, where he's behind him, but he can't, unless he gets a hook, you're really rolling the dice there. You need someone to come at him. So you use a cornerback. If you run at him, overlap, you're done anyway. So it's one of these situations where the structure... when the structure fails further out the field, usually the fellas that it fails is the full back line because they get isolated and then they're overlapped. So in that situation, you know, when you could see that there was just wide open gaps coming through, it was inevitable it was goal, but it was amazing that it came from such a simple thing that, you know, so many players committed to between the 45 and the 65. One ball lands, a hand pass, and that there's straight through and goal from the 65. That to me says alarm bells there, that there shouldn't be a straight track through and goal from your own 65 after your puck out. You know, if you look at even any of the other teams from the weekend, there's no scenario there where a ball broke from their own puck out that was in the other team's half that you could say there was a straight run through and goal. So the systems that are being played here are meant to be in Waterford's favour, but they're actually coughing up chances that shouldn't be there for the opposition. And that's just one of the examples there. And that's something I'd definitely be looking at if I was part of the Waterford panel, to say, look, whatever we're trying here, if it gets turned over, like, we're wide open at the back. So that was, like, from a back's point of view, it's a nightmare stuff.
Yeah, we'll take a bit more on Cork Waterford in a moment. I don't want to forget the second part of Shane Power's question, which was specifically for yourself, Will, with Murph and Skell having their player romances over Johnny Glynn and Mikey Butler. By the way, a member of a backroom team from a county, I'm not going to out them here, but they said they were in New York recently and they heard that Johnny Glynn is more likely to play for Galway this summer than he is to play for New York. So they were really questioning Glynn actually being down as a New York player. So more anon if he comes back to play for Galway. But that was the inside scoop that I got. This is a member of a backroom team who does quite a bit of driving and listened to all three of our pods when he was on the road last week. So,
fair play, thank you.
So there you go. That's getting through a lot of content. Who is your secret hurling romance? Well, presumably an Offaly player. So there's a few players I like. Again, I don't know whether this has to be a current player or whether this has to be a former player.
We'll go one of each.
All right, so the lads are basically going for players from their own county, so why not stick with Offaly players here? So if it's going to be a former Offaly player, I went through a few different periods, right? So Brian Whelan is just like up there. He's like the Michael Jordan of Offaly hurling. It's too obvious. That can't be a romance. That's
I think I might guess your one. Sorry to cut across, but go on.
Go on, have a guess.
I think Johnny Pilkington. I think you like Johnny Pilkington.
Oh, it's close. I do like Johnny P. But
okay,
it was two other players that I really liked from that era, right? So Johnny Dooley was the big hero because was the guy who scored the free in the 94 final, and he was such a kind of stylish hurler as well. Apparently Henry Shefflin was a massive Johnny Dooley fan as well when he was growing up. Player that was probably my kind of folk hero, and he's better than being a cult hero, but just because of the flicks, the tricks and everything else.
John Troy.
It's John Troy, yeah.
Yeah.
So I remember a few years back, he was managing the Offaly Camogie team. Obviously, John had been out of hurling for quite a while at the time and whatever else. And at one point, we were chatting away. A stray ball just came high in the air. And John just plucked the hurl that he was leaning on while we were chatting up into the air. And he took it down perfectly in one fluid motion and just put it down, put the ball down between his legs. So that just went to show his touch, even probably 10 years out of intercounty, was still absolutely immaculate. And
yeah.
I used to love the Troy flick. I used to love all the different skills that he did and that he could execute them like at such a high level. And then you talk to lads who were on the same panel as him and lads who used to room with him and stuff. And Sir John was like mad. He'd be going out in the tear and he'd be having the crack and he'd be smoking cigarettes. Like just a player from a different era, but skills to pay the bills. So for that reason, John Troy is there as like
skills
the kind of...
pay the bills.
Yeah, that's a real off the ball phrase, surely.
I love it.
Rob from the rugby lads, surely.
I can hear the excitement in your voice, Will, talking about them.
Right, so John Troy is amazing. Right now, I put Ben Keneally on the team last week when we were picking the one from every county. But the one that really stands out for me, and he scored a goal at Nolan Park at the weekend just gone by, is Charlie Mitchell, who has just come on so much in the last 18 months or so. Always had talent, would never have doubted that, but he seems to have this real drive to keep on improving. And for the younger players who are coming through at the moment, he is the template for them because he's put on a good bit of muscle, his work rate has gone up and up and up, and he's also very, very talented. So... yeah, I think at the moment, Charlie Mitchell, another player I really like, put his bloody arm out to get broken in the Joe McDonough final last year with Dave Nally. And Dave Nally also one of the best sideline takers in the country. So of the current lads, like Charlie Mitchell, like David Nally, and we'll put John Troy as the kind of cult hero there. So hopefully that answers Shane's question fairly there as we get back to Cork here. So we mentioned the comebacks, Gal, during the game. So obviously Cork would be disappointed having that period where... Waterford run off 7 out of 8 scores, and it gets back to a 3-point game at one stage, 119 to 116, when really Cork should have had them completely beaten. Now, they put over a couple of points themselves. Joyce, Connolly stick over points, which just kind of gave them a bit of a buffer again. But I'd say there must have been some thoughts within that Cork camp of, here we go again, having lost two other tight games already.
Yeah, like I thought your man Saunderson, the keeper, did fairly well, like for a young lad. You know, we'll talk about Offaly now in a while, about the under-20s, and give them, you know, kudos for the performances. But it's hard for him to come in, you know, into a spot coming from the 16, taking a temporary position because Patrick Collins is the number one there. But he did very well for like 55, 60 minutes. But from some of his striking choices at the end, let's say, I thought contributed to Cork's, you know, Waterford's comeback. So I thought when Cork played the ball short and started running at Waterford, like Waterford couldn't really deal with it. So what Cork were doing was they're working the ball out from position number one up to, let's say, 8 or 9, then delivering into the forwards. And there was so much space and lateral running that Waterford couldn't do anything with it. When that kind of stopped, you know, and it became more of a battle, call it a 50-50 battle, like long ball, that's where Cork started to lose kind of the rooks, the fights, and then Waterford started plugging away. And I just think it was a game management thing whereby if you're 10 points up, you can't really let a team back, you know, without conceding a goal, let them back in at all. You know, if you concede one or two goals, fair enough, they come back in quick succession. But if you get a team that can consistently get a run, yeah, point after point after point, and not stem the tide, that's probably a slight bit worrisome. But I am putting a bit of value on the fact that he did put in some debutants in against, you know, relatively tough opposition, and they did see it out. So it's as simple as that. They weren't beaten, you know, they weren't caught fully. There's things to work on. It is February, so like they'll go back into probably a video analysis room over the course of the next week. They'll pinpoint areas where they can improve and then try to get that improvement on the next game. But ultimately, they look at their game and they say that they were quietly content with the way they opened Water up a good few times. They should have had more goals, to be honest. Jack O'Connor could have had a couple of more, you know, with all the chances that they created. And they've got some guys that are playing well. It's good to see Mark Coleman playing well. You know, like there's always a space for a big man there to square. So when you see Hayes there, you know, the bit of probably commotion, he could know, create. Like, it goes back to the days where you, if you remember, Satanta Nisekio helping, and what was your man? He was a brute of a man that used to be full forward. Give me the name, or if you'll know.
Michael Cousin.
Jesus, what a size of a man. I swear to God.
My dream was years ago. I said, Jesus, if I caught a ball over Michael Cousin, that'd be it. I'd just walk off the field and retire. That'd be unbelievable. Yeah, he used to be in there full forward, and like, it was like, I remember when he'd be playing Cork and Michael Cousin would be come on, or he's starting, but like, there was like this effect, you know, when you bring on a player and it's like, right, here he comes now, and Michael Cousin would win, and regardless who he's marking, like, it looked absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, he must
have been, he must have been 6'6 or 6'7. Yeah, yeah, nice fella.
Man, when he stood beside me and I was looking up to him going, you are a behemoth, right?
That's how we feel at Jews Gal, you know that?
I have you scared though after the night out in Dublin.
You'll be scared forever. Anytime I meet you, and you go on.
Is Cousin a guard, no?
I don't know. Jesus, he's a big guard.
I thought he was a guard. Yeah. I'm up to correction, yeah, but my point being is there's still a place for the big man in the square. So it's good to see the likes of Cork. Cork have been, you know, probably attributing fast, speedy forwards, to say, in most positions over the last number of years. And now they have the Robbie O'Flynn's and the Hayes's and Barrett's, all these lads coming in, adding a bit of size. So we said just a couple of weeks ago they were a team to watch, and I stand by it.
Hmm. They're getting that blend there as well. So, as you mentioned, Breen Saunderson played in the goals. They had young McCarthy playing cornerback, and then Damon Cahalan, Seamus Harney come in. A couple of the more experienced heads were also still around the forwards as well. So, I guess, look, they're trying to find that blend at the moment, and now they've got their win and they've got it kind of up and running. It's interesting to see as well, Murph, that Billy Nolan is still playing outfield for Waterford this season.
It is, yeah. Was it the Tipperary game last year in Thurles, I think it was, that he came out the field? I could be wrong on that one, but...
Like, it felt at the time that was down to needing a player to step into a role, while now they've got all their players around and it feels like they see Nolan as a halfback within the team.
Yeah, it seems to be something that they're going with. I do believe he does play outfield with the club as well, so it's not unheard of either. Yeah, like, I mean, it's maybe not that crazy. Like, Richie Reid used to play in goal for us, and he's now the centre-back for Kilkenny, for, you know, and nobody questions it. Like, I mean, he is holding the fort there. So, like, Owen Murphy as well. I'm only thinking of examples I know myself. Like, Owen Murphy, centre-back for his own club. I think there's maybe an understanding there as well that, like, goalkeepers often are looking out the field at players and, you know, they, Skettle will comment on this maybe a bit better, but... Because I suppose you're standing back from the game at times, you can maybe see things that are happening and see where lads constantly keep making the same mistakes, particularly at a centre back. Maybe they drift out and leave a big gap there, whatever it may be. So I often find the goalkeepers actually have a really good understanding, particularly in that middle area, because they're observing the game so much and they see so many maybe positional mistakes from players, or maybe they see players who hold the fort in a certain way that. If they were in the same position, that, you know, they would do that. This is the type of player I would be. But Billy Nolan, look, maybe there's something seeing him there that he gets on ball. He, you know, maybe spreads it out very well and moves the ball around the field very well. But it's something they seem to be sticking with. They seem to maybe want to, I suppose, force it home that he's now not considered a goalkeeper anymore, that this is where he's going to be playing. And Davey wants to persist with it. You know, he wants to find some sort of use for him out there. So, like, I mean, again, I'm going back to the Tipperary game last year when they threw him out and people were looking at what was this. He actually was involved in the game, you know, straight away. There was no hangover. There was no kind of, right, I'm out the field now, what am I doing? So, you know, certainly I think if he gets a bit of traction, he could be effective. But look, like we're saying, it looks like it's something that Davey's not going to give up today or tomorrow.
Right, Skell, defends the intra-county goalkeeper here and the skills that are required. And it's not just a case of an outfielder can stand between sticks or a goalkeeper can go out and play outfield. Why are we seeing so many players that can do a bit of both now? What is it about the skill set?
I have to go back. Skill set is one thing, but I have to go back to what Murph said about, you know, assessing the game. So when we're playing the game with goalkeepers, like, we're not marking anyone. That's pretty obvious, right? So, but we're reading the game the whole time. We're trying to anticipate where the ball is going or what kind of tactical moves opposition are going to do. So we spend a lot of our time nearly breaking down the opposition, if that makes sense, right? So Billy Nolan, I don't see him occupying a prototypical position marking someone. I can't see that. The only way I see him being outfield for Waterford, if he's in kind of a plus one or a sweeper role where he has free rein to read the game and get on the ball, be an out ball for a Waterford defender and then start an attack. I just can't see him, you know, in 6 or 7 weeks' time, shifting up at number 7, marking, you know, Tom Morrissey. I just don't see that. And I think if that does materialise where he is doing that role, that's a problem for Waterford, you know, to be honest, because I don't think he's as good as the Watford backs. It's that simple, you know. So if he's positioned in a sweeper role where he's at the top of the D and he's moving laterally left and right, picking up loose ball, cutting out attacks, all for it, because he's obviously a clever hurler, you know. But there's levels to this shit, like, you know what I mean? Like, we're asking him to do, you were going out there asking him to take on a Clare forward line or Limerick forward line, you know, man-to-man. That's not going to be very easy. If you adopt a seven-man system in the backs, fine, I'll go with that, you know. But I can't see a situation whereby, like, some of the Water defenders, barring injury, you know, would lose out in a starting position to Billy. No, that's no disrespect at all, you know what I mean? That's this case for, with respect, every inter-county goalie at the moment, you know. I can't see any of them marking anyone. I don't think anyone has the skill set is one thing, but the actual athleticism, the fitness that some of the outfield players and the backs have nowadays is not to be laughed at.
Okay. It was a Jack O'Connor kind of weekend in Division 1A. So Jack O'Connor of the Wexford variety got the late score at the end, which saw them draw against Clare. So Wexford are kind of tipping along. So a draw against Kilkenny, a draw against Offaly, and now a draw against Clare. They remain unbeaten so far. You had Clare trailing by a point at half time, despite playing with the wind. So it was Wexford 1-6, Clare 8 points at half time. Then Clare had a good run within the game itself. And then Mark Rogers pops over a point at the end of normal time. Looked like they were about to get the win. 16 points to 1 goal in 12. And then O'Connor comes on to get the late point, which gives him the draw. The thing, before we talk about the game itself, that baffles me somewhat here is that I think it was Friday evening, the ruling had come down that Jack O'Connor had won his appeal. I think all of us agreed last week that it was a very tough call on him to get the red card in the Offaly game before the break, where himself and the Offaly midfielder David King are kind of having a pull at each other, and O'Connor puts his hand out and seems to catch the top of the helmet, maybe the top of the face guard. By the letter of the law, it is a red card, but it was decided on appeal that the infraction couldn't be proved that he had deliberately grabbed the face guard. To me, the most bizarre part about this is that David King, who didn't have any action against him during the game, as part of the disciplinary, got suspended. So he got upgraded to a red card from no offence, and Jack O'Connor got downgraded from red card to none.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, at the time we were saying, though, that we think David King, like, obviously he did have more of a hold on Jack O'Connor, and that's what kind of instigated the whole thing. But I don't think there was any big public outcry for David King to get a suspension. Seemed to just kind of come in left the field to go, oh, Jesus, actually, he's gone as well. I think all the focus was on, right, Jack O'Connor, and we'll just, right, is he getting off it, or is it sticking? And then out of nowhere, side stage enters David King's suspension. So unfortunate for him. But I think if we were to go back and we're going into the moment and we were to say, right, show you the moment one of these players is getting sent off, I would be saying David King, though. I wouldn't be saying Jack O'Connor, because Jack O'Connor, okay, he does kind of get narked and he swings the hand back and he maybe just catches the top of the helmet. But who out of the two players who has the face guard grabbed, it's David King. But yeah, I just don't think any of us were expecting that to come true on the appeal.
It was just a quirky thing to happen at the appeal. Like, I think I said to you at the time, because we were even chatting on the night that it happened, I was like, so for me, it's either no red or two reds. Because of the way the two guys tangled with each other. And then the bizarre part was, like, I had no problem necessarily with Jack O'Connor getting off on this. And I see a lot of people are saying that, you know, he grabs it, it's a red card offence, and so therefore he deserved the suspension. But I kind of thought mitigating factor was that there's another player pulling at his helmet at the same time. He possibly doesn't even see what he's doing, and he reaches his hand out. No problem with O'Connor getting away with it. But to me, it seemed a bit mad that even though he wasn't part of the process necessarily, David King ends up getting suspended, which was, there you go. So he wasn't able to play against Kilkenny in the game that was played yesterday. But in the end, it finishes up a draw. And the issue for Wexford coming out of this one, Skell, and Joe Canning talked about this a bit on League Sunday, is that they had to go around various free takers after Lee Chin was taken off in the 25th minute. And the free taking was inconsistent. That has been a problem for Wexford that wasn't today or yesterday. Without Chin there is a free issue, isn't there?
There is, but like even when we were talking about them over last year and we were doing the kind of the championship projections, we would have said that a perceived, you know, weak area for Wexford would have been their free taking. You know, like when we say weak now, we're not talking about them being poor. We're saying that the percentages that they produce, let's say, might be 65-70%, whereas the top teams, you know, the TJs and Evan Islands will be producing and get lands 90-95%. And so from a marginal perspective, when games are tight, that's critically important, you know. So like if you've got this, we would always say, like, if you've got a good goalie and a good free taker, you're halfway there. Because if you can stop goals going in and you can take the points that you're given in terms of frees, you know, you're that means you're taking every opportunity given to you. So it's a problem. Like if I watched League Sunday, the crammed version. If you and I think was it Shane or Joe started naming a few free takers, and I was trying to go back through the record books in Wexford, and I was saying, when was the last time they had a legitimate top class free taker? And I have to go back as far as Paul Codd. Do you mean that? I'm going back that far. Like, and he was like, he was a bit like Land, you know, a left sided player, let's say, kind of unorthodox style, but like he was popping them. And then as you go from then into the present time, it's hard to see or remember. Now, we probably will be open to correction when we throw these kind of statements, right? So a Wexford hurler who was consistently hitting 90%, and it is an issue. It's a problem area, you know. And now we have an injury to Chin, and like in fairness to Casey, did very well yesterday. You know, had a fine performance, but when there's game on the line situation, you know, and you want it done, and it's missed, you know, I think if you put the same free in front of, you know, T. Jergalan, that's a white flag, and that's a victory for that team. So that's an area for work on. How we fix it, I know it's, they often talk about frees being a confidence thing. Let's say if you can get free takers going into a good mindset with the confidence, it'll start rolling. So maybe just pick one person and tell them, because these are your, barring injury, of course, the frees are yours, hell or high water, stick with them and just go at it. You know, who knows how bad Chin's injury is. And if he is the man, stick with it. It looks like he will be, but it's definitely an area for concern.
Yeah, I think if everyone's fit and they have Rory O'Connor for those kind of closer ones, Lee Chin for the mid-distance, and let Fanning hit the really long-distance ones, they're probably okay. But it's an issue when, say, Chin or O'Connor aren't there. And I've been various times where even Lee Chin hasn't hit the frees perfectly. And you're just thinking they could do with a specialist pre-taker out there. So it has been a problem for quite some time. On the injuries, Keith Rosser said after the game that they lost Lee Chin after 27 minutes. He said, quote, he felt a muscle problem. Lee knows his own body, so he decided to come off. It's only February, so there was no point in risking them further. Now, that would indicate to me it's probably not that bad. And they lost Kevin Foley to an injury early in the game. And he said, again, it looks like it's his knee, but it's too early to know the extent of the injury. He said he was unable to run the injury off. So obviously they want Kevin Foley and Lee Chin fit for championships, so they're not going to take any risks at this stage. But
can I ask you this? When you watched the game and said, is it just me or did Lee Chin look excessively big?
He's definitely put on some muscle in the post.
Does it look like he's gone to a size that, like, let's say... you know, it's going to be hard to, I won't say maintain, but hard to carry in coming to hurling. Or am I reading things wrong here? Sometimes the jersey can give a different perception or change of helmet or whatever it is, you know. But I was looking at him yesterday going, geez, you're a rubber player. You know what I mean? That's what it looked like. Am I wrong?
Yeah, well, he did do yoke with Andrew Porter lately. And yeah, he was actually bigger than Andrew Porter in many, well, he's taller than him, certainly. But I mean, they were very well matched up in terms of broadness and size. So yeah, he's a big man. Like, I mean, he's not going to be lacking anything, certainly. There's no player going to push him around. Yeah, but no, I know what you're saying. Like, picking up niggles and carrying that sort of muscle, you know, far be it for me to say about Lee Chin, but I would have noticed it at times when, if I went back after my 30s and you were trying to build that muscle again, or, you know, carry that muscle, that's where niggles kind of maybe occurred. And look, again, sports scientists may have one argument about maintaining strength and size and so on, but like at the same time, you know, if you're at a time in your career where potentially the body could break down a small bit, having excess muscle on that may cause issues. I don't know. But
do you think, like, when I think of certain players in a couple of codes, I think of Keane Lynch. Like, he got very, very big and had problems with the hammers, you know, the year before last. And look at, like, even Keith Earls, he had issues. Robbie Hinshaw had issues, you know. That, different sports, albeit. But sometimes players get to a size whereby their body just can't cater anymore, so they have to kind of slim down a bit. I'm just wondering, is this a contributing factor to injuries for Lee?
Yeah.
You know, because he's a supreme athlete, but, like, does he need to cut back 4 or 5 kilos and then hopefully the injuries will subside a bit, you know?
Yes, sure. It could be a point. Like, I mean, there could be a burden on the body there, and that's why he's picking up niggles. Like, I mean, if you look at, I suppose, players who are a bit longer, like Patrick Horgan, TJ, you know, they're not carrying big muscle. You'd wonder, does that facilitate them maybe not, I suppose, picking up those niggles and picking up strains as well, that their frame isn't carrying that excess muscle. So, look, it's interesting. Like, I mean, we had Sean Flynn on there a few weeks ago. Like, it'd be interesting to have a sports scientist as well have any observations. Like, in some sports, like rugby, it's nearly unavoidable that you need to have that muscle. In hurling, you know, you can get a, like, you don't need to be that big either, like, you know, but Again, but you look at, you know, look at Donoghue for Cork. I mean, look at Sean Finn, Mike Casey. They're huge men, like, as well, at the same time. So, like, if you look at the Limerick team, the majority of those lads are the same size as Lee Chin, to an extent. Like, you know, Mike Casey, Dan Morrissey, these boys, they're huge. So, it's a, like, we'll probably have a conversation over the next few weeks about teams not being able to compete physically with Limerick, you know. But at the same time, I'm playing devil's advocate for ourselves here. At the same time, you know, can we say that, I mean, Lee Chin would physically be able to match up one-on-one with any of those. So what is the desired outcome? What's the desired state to get to?
Like, I'm saying this now with no scientific evidence whatsoever in front of me. I'm just saying it from an open perception where I'm looking at, you know, Sean Finn and Mike Casey with ACL injuries. You know, I'm looking at Keane Lynch with a hamstring. I don't know, but just maybe I'm asking the question, and maybe a listener can come in and tell us, yes, it's a contributing factor when you go over an X percentage, you know, of waist to height ratio, whatever you want to call it. But because if I go down that rabbit hole, I could be here for a month.
I think the one thing I have to circle back to, and lots of these injuries, is just that the pure speed that the game's being played at the moment, and how quickly players are being asked to change directions. You
know? Bastard! Fucking bastard!
Oh my god,
fucking bastard. Sorry lads.
I think probably those on video will get to keep that. This might disappear in the audio version of the podcast, so if you're watching this on YouTube, this is an added benefit. That happened under your camera. Is that your pint glass gone?
Yeah, so I hit the card mic. Of my fucking
That was unbelievable.
And ding, ding, the microphone fell, which brought the pint glass, which landed on the floor. It's on into my laptop case and on my charger. That's Lord G. Okay, I'll stop. Anyways, continue, boys.
I'm just delighted that I didn't have to put my foot in it to make a pint of some strength and conditioning fellow who was pulling his hair out there saying, God, he doesn't know what he's talking about. So smashing a glass off the ground is a great way to get around that. Jeez, the sound of that's a scale. Maybe you didn't hear it now. You were in the midst of it, but that sounded brilliant.
You know the phrase, you've got to keep your composure. You know, that's where I'm at right now. I'm trying to maintain a level of composure. I can't say what I want to say. I'm surrounded in glass, so I can't move. Okay.
You've said it several times anyway.
Sorry, I apologize.
Okay, well, don't go near the glass. So the situation Clare are in now, so three games played, two wins, one draw, same as Kilkenny, 5 points on the board. Clare have got Offaly in their last game, which they would expect to win as well. So almost certainly Clare are now looking semi-final bound, and also they're going to be in Division 1A for next year. So you would think, Murph, it's a case of job well done for Clare so far.
Yeah, like in fairness to them... Like Clare are building that momentum that we're speaking about. Like again, okay, draw at the weekend, but like a tough game. They didn't deal with the breeze too well when it was in their favour. But that's actually something that, and we've spoken about it previously, where sometimes when there is a really strong breeze playing in your back, some teams don't deal with it too well because they end up taking a few bit of pot shots and different things like that. Now, not necessarily Clare were at that, but sometimes it suits a team a bit better to actually play into the breeze. But like, there's a great kind of consistency about Clare at the moment as well, where, you know, David Fitzgerald was just, you know, he was so strong there, popping up with a few scores, just looked really powerful. And they're able to cope now at the moment as well with when they have to rest players, or, you know, maybe players have injuries, that they're still able to consistently perform. And that's something that we're talking about other teams there that were worried. When they have injuries, we're kind of worried. But Clare are actually in the groove at the moment, that they appear like that they can go, you know what, we have a few injuries or we need to rest lads. That's no issue. Like even Aidan McCarthy, again, he had a slow start to the league in the first game. I know about that because I had him in my fantasy team and he just didn't score. And then, you know, Murphy's Law take him out and he'll start scoring. But again, like, they do have scoring threats around the field as well. So look, Clare will be happy with where they're going. They're getting to rotate a good few players, getting lads in and, you know, still getting the results they need. And like, you know, going on to Wexford Park league game, that's a tough place to go. So I think they'll be happy enough with where they are after a few games that they're happy with their progress so far.
Yeah, so the other game was in Division 1A, which I was keeping an eye on, was Kilkenny against Offaly. So Offaly got themselves into a really good position within this game. So they were 14 points to 8 up at halftime, albeit having played with a gale wind. 8 points to Moan Cal, he was putting the freeze over. Kilkenny couldn't really get any kind of flow going in the first half. I think they only had one run where they scored 2 points in a row. Offaly are working remarkably hard. Again, we got to see Adam Screeny against Mikey Butler. Second time round, Adam Screeny had a better day than he did for Kilcormac Lough against O'Loughlin Gaels. He had Butler scrambling around a little bit during the game, but it was an interesting tussle between the two players. You wondered if 14-point state was going to be enough at half-time. Kilkenny got back in, regrouped at the break incredibly well. And they had this 12-15 minute period just after half-time where they went to town. And Owen Cody, when he puts the ball into the net, when a lot of other players would have probably went for a point, this was 12 and a half minutes into the second half. Kilkenny had gone from 14 points to 8 down to leading by one goal and 18 to 15 points. So it was just this blitzkrieg at the start of the second half from Kilkenny. Offaly kind of fought back then a little bit, and Kilkenny won by 7 points in the end. But it was a far, far better second half performance from the host. There were a few groans from the crowd in Nolan Park during the first half when they were making mistakes, type of mistakes that they can't afford to make when they play against better opposition. But here's the thing, Skell, from Offaly's point of view, doesn't matter if it was because Offaly were playing well or because Kilkenny were playing badly in the first half. Offaly have now put incredible performances against Waterford, against Wexford, and now against Kilkenny. So when you come up from Division 2A into this top flight where there's a lot of the best teams in the country around, I think my county will probably be happy enough with how they've done so far.
Yeah, I think with some counties, let's say, if you've got, you know, an average age of 24, 25, whatever it is, and they've been up and down in leagues, you know, sometimes we expect them to contest a game, then slip back and get hammered and contest a game. But what's happened here now is there's been an injection of youth with the under-20s. So I think by my count yesterday, there was about six of them that featured. Versus one for Kilkenny. Is Drennan the only guy that's under 20 for Emer?
I think Timmy Clifford is under 20. So
My point being is that it's a very good showing on Offaly's behalf when you've got under 20s who are able to, you know, mix it. And the longer that they get, I suppose, left, if you like, in the team, the better off they get. So I think you won't see the fruits of the labour this year because they have to learn. And there's a period of time where they have to, you know, get accustomed to this level. But they're doing well. Like if you look at like Ravenhill, as I said, Mitchell, Screeny, Bourke, Troy, all these lads are not being found out. That's the first thing, and they're contributing. Now, their levels will go up. Do you know what I mean? So like, and all it takes is for a group. So everyone will point towards the Offaly underage. That's fine. But I'm pointing to that Offaly under 19 team, if you want to call it that. If you know what I'm saying, 19-20 team, whereby there's about 17 or 18 players in that group that can actually be taken, kept together, moulded, and then formulate, you know, a senior team for years to come. So you don't need an injection of youth from 14s, 15s, a conveyor belt if you get a good group like you've got. And it just seems like Offaly have taken, you know, the nucleus of that group, put in a senior team right now. Next year, there'll be a couple more, and so on and so forth. And then you could be back at the top table very soon. I don't think, sorry, I mean this disrespectful. Not that you could be back. They will be back at the top table. I'm cocksure that it's going to happen, that it'll happen in, you know, the next 18 months or so. So I think it's good times for Offaly. They've got to keep on the shoulder of the wheel. It's not the work isn't done, if you know what I mean. It's a continuous process, but certainly the future's bright.
Yeah, they still have Cork and Clare, so there could be a couple of rough days to come before the end of this league campaign. But again, at this stage, the fact that they haven't been blown away by anyone is a pretty good sign so far. Go on.
My wife just texts me, "What was the bastard fucking bastard for?"
Your good wife is now guaranteed we have to leave the smash of the glass into the audio recording as well, or people are going to wonder,
sorry.
Well, what was this, I wonder? So
you have to leave.
Yeah, it's staying in. Murph, I suppose from Kilkenny's point of view, they have to take something from the fact that they did hurl as poorly as they did for the first 35, but then were able to actually regroup at half time and put in that kind of killer third quarter in the game.
What I actually really enjoyed about Derek Ling's interview was when he was asked, you know, was there choice words in the dressing room at halftime? A lot of other managers say, no, we left it on to the players and so on. Now, he did say that to an extent, but he was like, yeah, there was choice words. Is he sweeping up the glass at the moment? Ah, Jesus.
He could have muted while doing this, but anyway, go on.
He could have. Scale, can you mute? No.
I can mute him. Okay. Hold on.
You might have to edit that part to it.
Continue there.
I suppose what Derek will be disappointed with from the first half is that it showed a mental frailty that they didn't just go out and attack into the game. You know, mental frailty that they didn't show against Westmeath last year, for example, down in Nolan Park. They just went into the game, did what they need to do, get out of it. And like, those games are dangerous. You get drawn into that and you presume that you're going to go out and just turn it on. You know, I've been in that position before. I'd say probably every player has been in that position before, where they go into those games and suddenly they can't get the momentum back. Now, thankfully, Kilkenny did. But at the same time, like you said, like, I was really impressed with Charlie Mitchell. Like, you know, he started really well, got his goal in the second half as well. You know, so there's a lot there. You could see the gale force wind as well. Killeen Kiley's point from his own D, from the puck out. I mean, like, you're not going to hit them every day. But look, Kilkenny will be disappointed. But, you know, you can point to Wexford as well. I think they were drawn into something as well. It's not to play down Offaly's performance, but maybe gave the first 10 or 15 minutes up because they didn't come to the pitch of the game the same way Offaly are. But you have to give credit to Offaly that they're attacking into these games straight away. Like, they were disappointed with the Waterford one. They didn't go into the Waterford game really straight away, hammer and tongs, as they have against Wexford and Kilkenny. But I think now in the break week, they'll be saying, right, lads, well, fair play. Our stock is rising here and we've corrected some of the mistakes we started off against Waterford and we've brought them forward. So they'll be happy with it. But, you know, definitely Derek coming into this break week will be saying, look at lads. And he's rotated players. He's given players a lot of chances. But the likes of Walter Walsh coming on, you know, he'll be pointing back to a few of the younger lads who are getting chances, saying, lads, Walter Walsh came on, you know, contributed there. And it was some of the older lads again that were, you know, obviously you're relying on Owen Cody, Adrian Mullen getting 6 points, one from a free, five from play, Billy Drennan again. So, like, you know, he'll be able to use that, I suppose, to the younger players to say, look, lads, if you want to be on this team, there's an opportunity. And for some of you, it might be an opportunity missed. So I think Derek Ling will certainly use his ammunition against the lads, particularly that you're going to be facing Clare in the next game.
Yeah. Do we take it as a given at this stage, Paul, that we won't see TJ Reid until Championship? Because Kilkenny probably will get to a league semi-final here, so maybe there's another couple of weeks to be had after the regular section. But do you just wait till the round robin before using him now?
I think so. Yeah, I don't see the major gains to be gotten there. I think TJ is just timing his run with this one. And again, we spoke of Keith Roster there saying that Lee Chin knows his own body and that's what the call was made. I think what we're seeing here also is TJ saying that, you know, he's racked up serious miles and I'm given the additional miles there of Ballyhale having competed in so many Club All-Irelands. And I think TJ at the moment is just going, okay, I know my own body. I know it works for me and I know what will get the best out of me. Because at the end of the day, the round robin is the main thing, is the next main goal at the moment. So I think they are just timing the run. I don't think that we'll see TJ. You might see one game maybe towards the end of it just to shake off the cobwebs, maybe 40-45 minutes. But I think from the indications we can see with Kilkenny at the moment, it seems to be a case of, okay, well, let's have TJ fresh for the league or fresh for the round robin series, and we're not too concerned about getting them out in the league here at the moment.
Yeah, so moving on to Division 1B scale, Limerick 330, Dublin 1 goal in 18. So again, Limerick are just such an imposing team when they come to Croke Park. I think they got 52 shots off during the game, which indicates just how much shot and chance creation was going on there. So again, Donegal Dalig has been scoring goals throughout the league campaign. He puts the ball in the net in the first minute, which kind of set the tone, really. It was 18 points in the end. He scored a second goal during the game as well. And Tom Morrissey also hit the net. He got 1-4 from play during the match. And Adam English also got 8 points. So they shared the scores around a bit. They were able to work some players back into the team. Obviously, there's been quite a bit of talk about the fact that Kyle Hayes played before his sentencing. And they also had, I think, first minutes for 6 different players during the league that came in this game as well. So this was a big change from the teams that have played the first couple of rounds. But the one that probably stands out, because he made the team of the week as well, Skell, was Cathal O'Neill having to go in at 6. So David Reedy, I think, picked up an injury late in the week. Declan Hannan's not back yet. And maybe this speaks to what we've said for the last couple of years about guys can slot into this system, that Cathal O'Neill, a natural, flashy scoring forward, ends up playing at 6 and all seems to be fine.
Yeah, but I think you're right. Like, a lot of people can slot into this team and will survive because the supporting cast is so good with. Like, sometimes I look at teams that play Limerick and, like, when the opposition have the ball, they often do more damage to themselves than Limerick ever, because look at some of Dublin's concession yesterday. It all came from unforced errors of turnover that Limerick just capitalised on and seized upon it, you know. And as teams that play Limerick and they can't execute the basic skills, but they can't execute some of the skills that Limerick can at such a high level. And when we talk about, like, a ball, passing a ball to hand on the run over 20 yards, there is no team that comes within an ass's roar, Limerick, because they're so good at it, they're so efficient, They've had numerous instances whereby they can score from a puck out, seven or eight passes up the field without the ball touching the ground. They're just so efficient and good at it. But other teams try beat Limerick at the same game, but ultimately they can't because they just haven't got the efficiency or the excellence. And it's that simple. But so when you slot in Conor Neal into that kind of system, you know, he's able to survive. And like we're talking about top-class hurler. And like if you're trying to find a position for him, naturally you and I will look and we'll say, well, it's in the forwards, but I don't know where he's going to go in the forwards now. Like, I don't know who he's going to replace because of the caliber of player he's up against. So is it a case of trying to fit him in the team, you know, or trying to find different spots from him? Who knows? Like, look what he's done with Kyle Hayes. And that happened at a time where we all thought he was one of the premier forwards of the country. So I don't know how the minds of John Kiley and his management team are working, but certainly they pulled an ace out there, put Conor Neal in a six, and he survived just fine.
So Limerick's position now, 6 points from their first three games. These would have been the three they would have been expecting to win. So they still have Galway and Tipperary to come in their two games after the break. Tipperary also on 6 points, three wins from three. Galway have got two wins, one defeat. Their defeat came against Tipperary. So Tipperary and Limerick are in pole position to qualify for the top two spots. But crucially, you want to make sure you're in the top three in 1B this year to ensure that you're going to be in Division 1A for next season. Dublin got a bit of work to do now. They do have a win against Antrim already. They still have to play Westmead. So from their perspective, Galway and Westmead, I don't know if four points is going to be enough. You would think that Galway will probably beat Dublin. So Dublin will be in most likely the newly formed Division 1B next year. So that's where they kind of stand at this stage. The thing about it is, Paul, I guess if you're Dublin, you probably point to the fact that some important players came back. So Donal Burke, kind of horribly for him, had to miss Nafina's fairy tale run with the hamstring injury that he picked up. Chris Crummy was back in his first game in over a year. We still have to wait. I think Owen O'Donnell is out for a few more weeks. But slowly but surely, that kind of panel is improving, which is probably the most important thing for Dublin right now.
It is, yeah. It's a glimmer of light at the moment because really, I suppose, when you're looking at Dublin's last few performances, the only thing you could look at to say that is going to send them in the right direction in some form or another is getting back a few of those names that you just mentioned. Like, I mean, particularly Donal Burke. I mean, for the last few years, he has been just the man that has been getting the scores and making them tick. And he's, you know, he's just this Rolls Royce of a player. He, you know, he's outstanding. But to get a few of those lads in, like, you know, I mean, Chris Crummy, for example, as well, like, you know, when he's one of those lads similar to a Liam Rush type player where, you know, he can influence the game a huge amount, and he can be involved an enormous amount as well. So, look, Dublin will certainly welcome back the big names because they really need it at the moment. It was just a lackluster performance against the Limerick team. I don't think anyone had huge expectations for it. But, you know, when they see how much they just stood off Limerick and just let Limerick go through the motions, you just knew that, okay, this is just going to be one of those nights where, I mean, if you stand off Limerick, whatever chance you have, but just standing off them and let them get their heads up and let them pop balls around, I mean, that's what they're good at. So, look, if there's any sort of glimmer of hope going into a round robin for Dublin, it's getting a few of these players back and getting them in, injecting them into the team as quickly as possible.
Two ways of looking at the game that happened in Semple Stadium. On the one hand, you got to give Westmead a lot of credit. They fought this right down to the end of the game. And it was only really a fumble from Noel Connaughty when there was a pressure on him that led to an own goal. They gave Tipperary a little bit of a buffer right at the end of the game because Westmead had come roaring back at them. On the other hand, Tip win 3-25 to 2-21. And when there was about 20 minutes left, Tipperary were up by 14 points and have been in control. Two wonderful goals from Mark Keogh. For anyone who didn't see it, I think it was the second goal that happened pretty much in the space of a minute where Tipper just like flicking passes around before it comes back to him. He puts it in. I think he got a bit of a knock, so he came off at half time as a precaution. Haven't heard that the injury is bad. But that showed like Tip were in control, having made a host of changes to their team. It was 14 changes from the game against Galway, getting a bit of game time into some of their older players like Dan McCormack and Noel McGrath. We had Ford on the pitch for the first time this year. They also gave some young players a chance like Sean Hayes. We saw Cathal Quinn playing for Mary Eye in the Fitzgibbon. David Kelly came in to get some game time as well. So Cathal was kind of mixing it up a little bit within the game itself. But the other storyline coming out of this is how well David Williams is scoring. So Westmead got Killian Doyle back onto the pitch during the game, so that's a huge boost for them. Also after the game, Joe Fortune said Angus Clark, who's a very important player, is back in training and he's nearly back to fitness too. And it looks like Davy Glennon might well be back after the break. So slowly but surely, they're getting some of these injured players back in. But David Williams again, he scored 2-12 and he had a penalty saved by Rhys Shelley as well. So he was unlucky not to come off the pitch with three goals and 12 points. Niall Mitchell, bearing the square at this stage, he's very effective when they go in a bit longer, and he's there to try and win primary possession. And this is a Westmeath team who could well have just downed tools with 20 minutes to go, taken a beating and moved on. But a bit like the Limerick game, they stayed in it with a few minutes to go. So while lots of bright spots for Tipperary with the way that they hurled, and at the same time, Paul, Westmeath have to be very happy with the way they've played, particularly against both Limerick and Tipperary in back-to-back games now.
Yeah, look, we've spoken with Westmeath over the last few years, I suppose grinding out moral victories for the most part, but like, they just do have these, you know, they do have players there that are, you know, still putting in really good performances, which can't be easy, you know, when maybe you're not getting the results you want, or obviously it's going to be easier when you're winning, but you know, there's remarkable scoring that is happening within that Westmeath team, and you know, We have at no stage been hard on Westmeath. If anything, we've praised him quite a amount. But I don't think he can harp on it enough, really. Just, I suppose, the bravery and the courage. They're going out each week and they're really putting in performances. And there's markers there. You know, Skettle mentioned it there previously and other times that, you know, markers, what can you come off the field with, even though you don't get the victory, but you can come off the field and say, well, like, that's you know, that's a serious marker. That's serious. Individually, there's a few players there that are just constantly showing up. And it's disappointing that a few players stepped away from the panel from their own point of view this year, that, you know, a more consolidated panel, and you'd wonder where the Westmeath team could go. But look, certainly, they have players there. And like, I even go back as far as when Kilkenny played them last year inside Nolan Park. You know, it was a terrible day, but I'm fairly sure the full back line kept Kilkenny's full forward line scoreless. Like, there was all these things that you were going, that's an outstanding achievement, considering there's not maybe much expectation in this game today. But Westmeath keep turning out these markers that you're just going, you know, if they get this right one of the days, there's potential there for them to get traction. And like, we've seen it. We've seen big victories down below in Wexford Park. You know, we've seen them really perform well. So look, it's maybe not the pat on the back that Westmeath want. They want results, but at the same time, you know, you do have to tip your hat to them and say, like, you know, there's flickers there of just, you know, really great achievements for them.
Liam Kyle summed up the fact that he won silverware for Tipperary this season. The league is very much there as a viable option. So three wins from three. The fact they've beaten Galway and Dublin, so they've got head-to-head over both of them already. With those three wins on the board, I know they still have to play against Limerick, but Tipperary are very well placed to qualify both for 1A and also for the semi-finals. You'd say they nearly have a foot and a half into the semi-finals already with the way the results have gone. So Tip moving along nicely. I'm going to put a contention to you, Skell, that a few people have been saying about Galway. Now, Galway win by 25 points against Antrim, and kind of all indications are this is a very difficult league campaign with the way things have gone from Antrim so far, even losing the goal against Dublin. But there is this kind of feeling out there that Galway go and hammer the teams around them who they should be beating, but maybe they don't put in the performances against the better teams in the league. How do you respond to that?
I respond in agreement. You know, like, we never have a situation whereby we have a perceived slip up against opposition that would be classed as, you know, inferior. I don't mean that to say in a bad way, but you'd never see us slip up against Laois, Westmeath, you know, Antrim, Carrick. They just don't. They're usually very, very clinical in their performances. So, and I think it comes down to kind of fluency of the game and the confidence thing, you know, that it's like they know the result before they go out. And it's hard for me to explain this because there's like, not that there's a safety net, right? But these games, like, Galway are so used to playing them over the course of the years that they know, look, they're only going to go to win. It's a case of how much, you know what I mean? And no matter what the team throws at you, yeah, you'll have a day every now and then. I remember a league game against Antrim, you know, in 2018, there was a game against Kerry in 2019, you know what I mean? Different areas whereby you're put under a bit of pressure, but ultimately you come out. Then you play the top opposition, you know what I mean? Where you need your full complement of players, and there's often times we don't have them. And even we do, let's say, there's sometimes whereby it's only the league. You know, maybe a touch for blasé attitude, and whereby it's championship only. So I don't say it's a concern. It's not a worry. But I do agree with people who especially in the league anyway, that they say that we canter through these type of games and then struggle to play the big teams. So like you're talking about Tipperary there. It's hard for me to see how we qualify for semi-final without winning out. We have to win out, you know, at this stage. Yeah. We have to come away by beating both Dublin and Limerick and hope that Tipperary then will beat Limerick also. You know what I mean? So we catch them on the head-to-head, Limerick specifically. So as I stand here right now, I have confidence in us beating Dublin, but I'm just not sure about Limerick. straight up, you know what I mean? Like, I need to see us. There's lads who've come back into the Galway squad over the last fortnight who had prolonged breaks for different reasons, you know what I mean? You know, you're looking at likes of Whelan back from Australia. Joe Cooney just returned 2 weeks ago. Thomas Ledsner just back. Kyle Mannion is on the comeback trail. Doughty's only back 2 weeks. So I don't think we have the even when I say the mileage, just the work put in just yet for us to contend with Limerick. We'll certainly be competitive and certainly be physical, but are we going to win the game? I can't say with a huge degree of confidence we are. But I'm looking for performance. But yeah, league performances over the last couple of years, Will, haven't been great. You know, overall, haven't been great.
Yeah, direct up the scores, obviously. I forgot that there was no transfers this week in Fancy Hurling. I got up on Saturday morning and went, oh, I'm locked in with the players I have, even with a few injured players. But Evan Nyland did fine. He was my captain. He scored 13 points. Jason Flynn got goals in each half as well. And Tom Monaghan and Conor Cooney, 10 points between them. So Galway, we're really opening up on Antrim there.
Speaking of fantasy lads, what's the crack like? Where are you?
I believe you're doing quite well, Skeller. So
I can't even see you in my rear view mirror anymore.
Great fella.
Murph, I'm looking for you. I can't see you, Murph, in the top 10. I can't see you, Will.
I wouldn't say I am in the top 10, to be honest.
Actually, I'll change that. Murph, Will, I can't see you in the top 20.
Oh, no.
Can't see you in the top 30.
Oh, what's that? We're out of time on the pod. How unfortunate. I know. I'm going to give you credit, Skell. It appears that you've done very well and you forward planned quite a bit for your team as well, and it's paying off.
And I will admit, normally I like to take the credit, but I will admit there is a huge element to luck in this, because I did I did forget there was a transfer this week. So I got lucky in the weeks previous. I'm currently occupying second, Murph, in the hurling pod. There's Gerald Griffin from Michael Cusack's, who's ahead of me by 60. Oh, God, he's a good bit ahead of me.
Wow. He has to be one of the best in the country at the moment, then.
Gerald Griffin, he's on 794. So where is that now nationally? Let's have a look.
Well, I'm 45. I'm going to have to check in here. I'm 45 nationally. I'm going to check Will now. You're fifth. I'm 45. And Will is 133.
That's not bad. Scale's fifth overall.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gerald Griffin's actually number one.
That's incredible. Well, I'm glad that we're home to two people in the top five in the country right now.
What's the prize?
I've no idea. I'm sure we can find something. There's definitely a few bits and pieces that I have around. You can have a smart slitter, whoever wins, and maybe a jersey or something. I have nothing around.
Noel Gallagher is seventh. Hardly do Noel Gallagher, is
hardly
it?
Hardly Oasis Noel Gallagher. Surely not.
Oh, God. The unreal it was.
A fan of Man City and also fancy hurling. Just to finish up, I want to give a mention, because a few lads were saying last week, you didn't give enough attention to 2A. Well, 2A at this stage now, Carlow are pretty much into the final after their win against Laois. I was listening to this game on the radio on Saturday evening. And Carlow really, really opened up on them. So 123-21 was the full-time score. But realistically, Carlow were much further ahead during the game. 10 points up in the middle of the second half. Murph and myself both picked Martin Cavanagh in our team last week. Well, he was sending over the frees all night as Carlow were very much on top. Laois will now need to beat Kerry and Meath if they're going to finish in the top three and get into a league final. And of course, for the top two teams in 2A this year, you'll be in 1B for next year. The big changeover in Laois is the fact that Brian Horgan, who is their hurling coach, has now left the setup midway through the league amid speculation that the team weren't happy with the training. So it looks like during the break, they're now going to have to change around their backroom team. I think Eamon Jackman will probably become the main hurling coach. So that's Dan Shanahan gone at the end of last year, and now Brian Horgan, who was brought in to replace him, has now left. So Laois in a little bit of disarray, and they've got a bit of work to do, because Kerry kind of came back to a little bit of form. So Kerry now move on to 2 points. So they're 2 points behind Laois, Down or just behind Laois on 3 points, albeit Laois have already beaten Down. But Shane Conway, who was picked last week by Skell, back in the team. 1 goal and 9 points in Kerry's win against Meath. So this division now looks very tight. So Carlow sitting pretty, 6 points. Laois on 4, Down on 3, Kerry on 2, Meath on 2, and Kildare, the beaten finalists from last year, propping it up on 1. So at the moment, you would think that Carlow are probably going to qualify, but it's a right old fight to see who's going to finish up in the 2A final with them. So interesting to see what happens there. That is our lot for the first pod, lads. Skell, you've got all the glass picked up?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I won't know until I stand up.
Fair enough.
So
listen to the members pod later in the week to find out if Skell lacerated his foot, his arm or his hand when he was trying to get past the glass to check everything out. Paul Murphy, it's been a pleasure. Thanks a million.
Thanks very much, lads.
Right. See you for the members.
It's been a pleasure here, no?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you swore quite a bit, which is probably good for the swear jar. Actually, hold on. Before we do leave, is there any more on where your destination might be for your holiday?
For next year, is it?
No, for this year. There's three booked, isn't there?
Oh, so where she wants us to go? She wants holiday us to go to that place, Central Park, is it?
Oh, right, okay.
And you're not getting on a plane then, obviously.
Right, that's good news. So at least you get to stay in the country. I'm looking forward to hearing about the kids going around Centre Parks. Go on.
And then she's some nice estate down in, is there a nice estate in Clonmel or somewhere, Chip? There's some lovely estate down there.
Sure, we can look it up.
You have like a Mount Juliet one in place or Farnham or in places. This is another place, Tipperary. I can't remember the name of it.
I mean, St. John Alan Nolan's recommendation as well. Goalkeeper to goalkeeper. He was he was very confident about his decision to go wherever he went. I don't know. But so I'll send John his recommendation as well.
Send John, I mightn't read it.
It looks like you'll have to get on a flight, so I don't know. But
no, I won't do it for it. I'm scared for at least 24 months. I can't do it.
I think you can load up the car and go to Clonmel or go to Longford. That's not necessarily going to be a problem. So we'll find out more in the third location. Did you not find out what the third one was? No.
No, she has it. She's a bit. She kind of does things. If she won't ask me first for fear I say no, so she just does it anyways. So then I have to be, I have to come along. So I can't say no to her, because happy wife, happy life. I keep saying it, and it's true.
I'd call that wisdom on both your parts. Lads, thanks a million.
OTB's The Hurling Pod
with Bord Gáis Energy, proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.